Welcome to the EDUCAUSE 2009 Annual Conference Podcast. The EDUCAUSE 2009 Annual Conference brought together the most influential IT decision makers and resources to improve the ability of higher education to achieve its mission. This podcast is sponsored by Juniper Networks and Quest Communications International. We feature a session with Brad Wheeler, Vice President for IT, CIO, and Professor at Indiana University. His session is entitled, Collaboration is Strategy.
I'd like to begin by saying, as a business school professor, I take that word strategy pretty seriously. So when someone says, you know, my strategy is to get out of here and get to lunch, that's not really the level of strategy that I'm talking about. I want to think about strategy as something that's very, very, very important to an institution and its goals. Most of the time in business schools, when we talk about strategy, when we think about what a firm's going to do, the assumption that's always in the back of mind is, well, how is your firm going to gain a competitive advantage? Because with a competitive advantage, you would earn returns and profits for your firm above the industry average. And you can't say strategy without some homage to Michael Porter. Now, if you've tracked Michael Porter over the years, and many of you who suffered through business schools in your own education, you undoubtedly encountered his book on competitive strategy. But if you follow Porter's work over time, you saw that he kind of drifted away from that work and into the late 80s and early 90s. He was looking at the kind of the competitive strategy of nations and lots of things that were away from business strategy. Well, as the internet was starting to heat up, and he came back in 1996 and was rather irritated with the mess that, in his mind, higher ed had made of the domain of strategy. So he says, I'm going to explain it to you one more time in 1996 in an absolutely fabulous article called What is Strategy? He makes the first point that whether it's business process reengineering or hyper-competition or whatever you want to call it, operational efficiency and effectiveness is not strategy because everything can be imitated in cost-cutting over time. You cannot cost-cut your way to a sustainable competitive position in your industry. Seems timely for higher ed right now, doesn't it? Point number two, strategy rests on unique activities. So to think of an activity, it's something that a firm does, but it may do it in a way that is unique relative to others. So Southwest Airlines will take you from point A to point B. British Airways will, or United Airlines too. But we could all agree that the means through which they do the activities of getting you from point A to point B differ vastly. There is an interrelatedness of activities that can be inimitable. I love that word. Isn't that great? Inimitable, that cannot easily be copied. So United Airlines and Continental Airlines got a lesson in that not long ago with Continental Light and TED, their low-cost airlines that partially imitated what Southwest did. So if you think of three or four activities, and I imitate one of those about 80% the way your firm does it, and I imitate the other one 90%, and I imitate the other one 75%. What happens when you take 0.8 times 0.9 times 0.75? You end up with a disaster. You end up with about 40% of being right, and Southwest profitable every quarter since its inception, and other airlines figuring out they could not adapt and sew together imitating those activities. Finally, trade-offs are essential. And you would observe in the trials to be low-cost airlines, many of these firms failed to make those trade-offs. So when we think of activities, what do you actually mean? Well, it can mean lots of things. For commercial firms, I've got just a smattering of things. How you design products, how you choose where you put your stores, how you do rollouts, how you manage personnel and labor relations. For higher education, we have lots of activities, too. We have admitting students. We have tracking progress. We have applying for research grants. We have lots of activities ourselves as well. So in Porter's speak, The essence of strategy is choosing to perform activities differently than your rival. So back to the airlines, because it's a common example we can all appreciate. Southwest does not sell through travel agents. They sell directly. They don't pay a commission fee that way. That's an activity that they do differently. When it comes to acquiring aircraft, they buy 737s and 737s, or sometimes they buy 737s. Okay? So they are very disciplined about that procurement activity, where most airlines, they've got one or two dozen of just about everything that's ever been made, the legacy carriers. So there you see examples of doing things differently. So Porter wraps up by saying, if you want to achieve a sustainable competitive advantage, not a one-hit wonder, not that you had a good year and the next 2 years are crap, then you have another good year, but a sustainable advantage over time, you need to be performing different activities than rivals, or you need to perform similar activities, but do them in different ways. So by this point, everyone in the audience has invariably reached the conclusion of, what the heck does this have to do with higher ed? Well, I think there's a big but. When we think about corporate strategy, we think of it in a zero-sum game. If Starbucks gains a point in market share, maybe Seattle's Best lost a point. But it doesn't work that way for us. When Maricopa Community College graduates more degrees, that doesn't harm Indiana in any way. Frankly, it makes things better. When Cornell graduates more people or admits a great class or brings in a grant from a wealthy donor, that doesn't hurt me. That's good for higher education. You see, our industry is different. When we think about competitive advantage in higher ed, we have to think about education and research and play within the values of our industry. Our industry is different, but sometimes, friends, our behavior is not very different in how we actually think about this and work together. So to summarize Porter at the top, he says the essence of strategy is choosing to perform activities differently than rivals. I want to assert to you, for our industry, the essence of collaboration as strategy is choosing to perform activities similarly to partners and driving down costs via leverage. Now, if the key absolutely was performing activities differently than rivals, you'd have to think we were a remarkable industry because we have more Byzantine business processes than anyone known to man. 87 different immutable processes for how we change a grade among our campuses. Same core activity, but we do it very differently. So the argument here is not homogenization of everything we do, but the argument is an activity of collaborating is something. If we collaborate in similar ways with each other, we gain access to leverage and some efficiencies that were not available. So that was your quick 5-minute tutorial on strategy, and we will come back to that. I take the word seriously. But likewise, I take the word collaboration seriously as well. So I don't know what the proper definition for collaboration is, but this one seems to work. It is an unnatural act. My friend Robert McDonald back there with HathiTrust, he has a session sometime this week that's called IT Librarians and Unnatural Acts, I think, the story of HathiTrust. So we understand that many of us would like to just make all the decisions ourselves, have our own prerogative. I'm not sure I like your ideas. I'm not even sure I like you sometimes. You know, we approach collaboration that way. But interestingly, we folks here at EDUCAUSE and members of it, we seem to know a lot about unnatural acts. I searched on collaboration on the EDUCAUSE website. We have authored 332 publications, presentations, podcasts, and blogs on the topic of collaboration. So you could say our community, we are experts on unnatural acts. Or maybe we're experts on collaboration, at least in our own mind. But James Hilton provides a clarification that I think is important. He notes collaboration is not the same as cooperation. Collaboration requires alignment around a common goal. collaboration is about doing something together. And it may only last for a little while there is goal alignment in what we're trying to do. It means to co-labor together towards a common outcome and objective. So back to professor mode for a moment. We can't do anything without two axes and a curve. So if we're trying to understand domains of collaboration, we can agree it's a challenging thing to do. We would all agree. We tried. It is a challenging thing to do. But there are different domains in which we collaborate. If it's just two professors agreeing to share a high-performance research cluster, okay, well, they probably can figure that out over time. But what about two departments choosing to work together and collaborate? Or two schools? Well, maybe the School of Law and the School of Business, both professional schools, they've got some shared understanding. Maybe they can make a go of it. But, you know, the School of Arts and Sciences and the School of, you know, Business, you know, they may have a lot of differing assumptions about how the world is in the way that they work together. So as we think about this, we probably would agree that there is a curve that looks something about like this. The collaboration among a couple of people isn't that hard, but you start getting more where those decisions affect more people, and then more where those decisions affect more people, it starts to get quite difficult. Though one of my friends in debating this said, you know, it may actually go up with campuses. It might actually taper back down a little bit among institutions because you usually get to a key decision maker for an institutional collaboration. We would generally agree, though, that the collaboration among a few people in individuals or departments, it may create something good, but the value doesn't flow to necessarily everyone. Whereas institutions who collaborate and do things together, that may have a big institutional impact that touches a lot of people in using a service that's created together. But so far, this is only the first round. Collaboration is difficult. But what happens if you actually made it up the slope of retreat? Many times we head into collaboration and we go, oh, gosh, this is hard. Okay, so we're just going to stop there and we're going to work within domains we can succeed in, but we're not going to push on up that slope that involves culture change, assumptions, behavior changes to get to a different level. So if we did make it up that slope, and we started doing a second collaboration and a third and a fourth and a fifth with different partners, different topics, different staff, does the curve start to look differently? I would argue that the value curve may remain similar, that multi-institution collaborations may access value more so than just departmental ones. But I think the challenge part of this actually can be driven downward. That once you've experienced it, you've worked in one, you've worked in another, you've worked in another, your institution and you personally over time can learn to drive that down and exploit that gap. That you can get even disproportionate benefits from collaborating because you've learned how to do the hard work in driving some of that down through your own experiences. So if this is hard, and I suspect we would all agree that this is hard, why would you engage in doing this? I did this session this morning in the EDUCAUSE online. We had the benefit of the online polls. And I asked the question in the online polls. We had 230 sites online this morning. I said, if your institution stood accused of rabid collaboration, would there be enough evidence to convict? And, you know, the responses were, one, the judge would throw out the charges laughing, face value. Two, there would not be enough evidence to convict. And three, guilty as charged. Of those respondents, 5% said guilty. There's evidence to show we are rabid collaborators. 80% said not enough evidence to convict. And 15% the judge would laugh if you accused us of collaborating. So one of my colleagues, this is from Ted Dodds, he said, in thinking about why collaborate, at UBC, University of British Columbia, it's starting to change some of the values. He said, you know, the academic leadership of the campus is increasingly embracing a notion of coordinating business objectives and leveraging with other institutions and within our own university. And I call this the telescope reason to collaborate. It changes your outlook on the future of where your institution may be going. A second one is from the University of California. This relates to the HathiTrust project where the Google scanned books are going that are the university copies. Heather Christensen says, in the process of HathiTrust collaboration, participants are forced to solidify their own institutional goals. Well, if Ted talked about looking forward with the telescope is one reason, this one is the mirror. Collaboration holds a mirror up to your own organization. She notes, bringing the University of California, multiple campuses, to the point of view to the table has involved examining our own goals, even within our institution. But perhaps the greatest reason why collaborate when that curve is hard, it's what we're all here talking about, and that's the new normal. I think for many of us, we do not believe state appropriations are coming back at the levels that we once enjoyed. The returns that were not earned in these years when our endowments were really down, that money will never be created again. Now, the endowment may come back in time, but the profits from those years are not going to be there. So how are we going to adjust the academic enterprise to the new normal? Yesterday's Washington Post had a very informed editorial about higher education. And the point was, essentially, and it was a good essay. It wasn't, you know, muckraking, you know, those colleges are lazy and fat and evil. It talked about the structure, financial aid, healthcare cost. It was an informed essay. But it did observe that our cost and our have outpaced even healthcare cost, and dabbling around the edges with a few layoffs here and there or budget nicks would not bring about a structural solution to the cost of higher education. So we're all immersed in this. And why collaborate? One of the chief reasons is we have to. And I'll make some more points of that in a moment. It is essential. And so for Indiana University, our view, we've already observed, we achieve more when we collaborate with others to reach objectives that are locally important. But the means of fulfilling them is with others. It serves our mission. When we're involved in things like Sakai or Kuali or Hathi, we are in the process of knowledge creation and dissemination. The act of working together to define how faculty wish to have systems work, have students involved in some of that, it has changed what might have been a blah procurement activity into more of our staff engaged in the core of our mission of education and research. I know this is favorable to us over time. I will tell you without a hesitant moment, for IU's financial system, if I round up on everything we put in for that financial system and our implementation cost and roll the whole thing in, we avoided $18 million of expense that we would have paid otherwise, and that's money that stayed in the schools and the academic departments. So I know the favorable economics can be there over time, and there is no doubt this is the collaborative century. The internet has connected us together across campuses and continents. Look at what's going on right now in the world. Vastly connected societies are doing new things together. The genesis of the university was there were those expert faculty and those books and those library and that resource in the day that going to that institution was the only place to have that experience. The printing press changed that, as did many other things. So I know that our institution needs to adapt to that as part of the century. Leverage is very, very important. When we collaborate, we put our little bit in, and the fulcrum is down the way, and we get some other dollars in value back. John Norman, the University of Cambridge, I think he's the one who coined the term about the new collaboration math. Now, if this seems a little fuzzy to you, many of you may think that, where's the synergy? If I put in two and you put in two, shouldn't we get five because something magic happens? No, the reality often is collaboration has what group researchers call process losses in efficiency, that we have to coordinate. There are trade-offs. There are things that aren't pure production. And so 2 + 2 may equal 3 in collaboration math. But if I'm the guy putting in 2, and you're the guy putting in 2, but we each get 3 back, the math works just fine. Or if I put in 2 and someone else does 2 and 2 and 2 and it turns out and I get 5 back. So the new collaboration math actually works really, really well, even if a purely linear or exponential synergy is not present. Again, from Heather, and a personal observation. She says, you know, you work in one of these collaborative endeavors. HathiTrust, I should say, is the Big Ten universities plus the University of Chicago, what we call the CIC, plus the University of Virginia, plus the 12 campuses of the University of California, and more to come on soon. She says, you know, you've got an amazing amount of expertise in libraries and systems and building that thing, a richness of talent, but you got to find a way to make it work. It's hard to be able to do that. And that's what I mean, that 2 + 2 doesn't equal 5 necessarily, or even 4 sometimes. It may be a little bit less, but the decisions are formed in just a cauldron of fire of the way something should work. I know those who participated in the Sakai Project, you know, there are a lot of views out there among different faculty about the way it ought to be for teaching and learning tools. But we've had to learn how to build those tools and those trade-offs, and it has made the project stronger. And if you haven't seen or heard what happened at Colorado State University, it was amazing. Go look up their press release if you haven't seen it. They just put it out a day or two ago. They flipped a, can I say, 20-year-old financial system? Is that right? 15, 20-year-old financial system. Big bang, go live July 1. Purchasing, procurement, payables, general ledger, chart, the whole enchilada, big bang, less than $2 million for a big, complex university. Many of our institutions would need to add a decimal to make that explanation. What they say is the value of collaboration in the community made that possible. But you need to understand, Colorado State, in accounting terms, we would call them a LIFO entry. They were last into the project, and they were first out. You know, they were not a founder, but along the way, their board, their trustees, their leadership said, that's the system we want, and that's the economics we want to go after, and they have delivered and done it. It is an amazing story. They did it with commercial support and with their own internal staff as well. So it wasn't, it had a lot of the typical elements that you would see. So the main reason to collaborate, in my mind, is it absolutely serves our mission. We are perhaps unintentionally, but now as we step back and look a bit more clearly, we are co-laboring to what Chuck Vest calls the meta-university. Chuck Vest, president emeritus of MIT in the early 2000s, asked a group of faculty, said, you know, this online thing, you know, the dot-com heyday, you know, teaching at a distance was really taking off, and MIT really didn't have a plan. Asked a group of faculty, should we get into online education? And you could hear the great lecture of Professor So-and-so for $19.95. Just put in your credit card, and we'll scale that up to the world. We've got a great brand. Or do we do distance education? You know, what do we do? And that committee came back, and to the provost and the president blew them away. Said, no, what we ought to do is just give it all away. Just put it all online. Now, we're not going to grant an MIT degree online, but we'll open up all of our courseware to the world. Now, $35 million of grants from the Melvin Hewlett Foundation helped grease the skids a bit on that. But they pioneered and they were out front of us in doing it, and many other institutions have picked up open learning initiatives and such. But notice that Chuck observes here in 2006, if you haven't read this article, it is fantastic. EDUCAUSE Review, May, June 2006, that we are building this transcendent, accessible, empowering, dynamic, communally, or can I say collaboratively, constructed framework of open materials and platforms on which worldwide education can be built. So in just the shortest of snapshot and incomplete, just look at what we're doing with our collaborations. And I could easily add DuraSpace, Moodle, a bunch of others, but five fit, so you only got five. So if you look across this, it ranges from books, digitized books that are going in the HathiTrust, work on journals. If you don't know where we're at on the scholarly record, you've just not been paying attention. One of our co-presenters here, I saw a session titled, "For What Could You Do with $2 Billion a Year?" Well, that's what we're spending right now. I think the number is slightly lower than that for just the top 100 universities, but you put everybody in. $2 billion a year to rent the privilege to be able to read our own research. And if you don't put a quarter in the slot machine next year, you don't get to read it next year. This is not a good business model for us. We're doing the reviewing. We're doing the authoring. This has got to change. The Public Knowledge Project, the open journal system, is a big step in that direction. I believe the textbook world is going to change rapidly in the next 24 months. And it's not just Kindles and Nooks and Sony readers. That stuff's going to march along, and that's pretty good. But the model itself is breaking. I've talked to all the big publishers, this discussion. There are some things happening there, and this is core to our mission. But apart from for-fee educational resources, there's also open educational resources. And Connections, if you haven't been tracking it, is amazing. It's cnx.org, Connections. It's a place where faculty and instructors can go and share educational materials. You can even get a book. Like, there's a complete statistics book out there. If you physically want one, print on demand, about $20, they'll FedEx a nice bound copy of it to you. If you want to work with it in PDFs, you just do it. If you want to improve it and make it better, you can do so. This is a hub for communal activity of collaboration on educational resources. I suspect many of you here know about Sakai and what's going on with teaching and learning, and Sakai working on its third iteration now, really a next generation of rethinking it, and with Kuali on administrative systems. Financial 3's out the door. Research Admin comes out in 2.0 very soon. Student first module coming out first quarter. Rice 1.01 out the door. Several projects marching along there. Do you see what Vest is saying? That we are starting to build collaboratively the platform for the Meta University. Now, lest you be concerned, like, oh my God, something called Meta University Inc. is going to do a hostile takeover of higher education. No, not at all. Notice what he says. This will enable, not replace, residential campuses. Indiana University's investment in Sakai and choosing that for our teaching and learning path has not been impeded in any way by picking up the value of what the rest of the world has done and tools that we're bringing back in. And our ability to solve our own problem and make it available to everyone else raises all boats. And that's what he's saying. This will be adaptive. It's not prescriptive. There's a lot of things in Sakai we don't run at Indiana University. We have not chosen those tools for our faculty. But I like seeing them marching along. We may take them in time. I think this is more than anything the reason for collaboration. So if we dig into the collaborative era a little bit, what does it look like down in the salt mine for our people who have been laboring and busting rocks on that difficult multi-institutional collaboration curve. Well, in the higher ed ecosystem, I want to be clear that laboring in the collaborative era involves laborers of all stripes. And it's important to say this is not anti-commercial. I hear this comment from time to time, like, oh, you're just against the vendors or this and that. And I go, you are not paying attention if you think that, because look, this is just one example. For the Kuali Foundation, we have 10 commercial members of the foundation who have the same voting rights as Indiana University on matters before the foundation. They pay membership dues. Almost all of them who've been involved in one project or another are contributing either code that is released under open source, even their rivals can use it, or documentation, or they're out there helping to explain Kuali. Colorado State benefited from R-Smart helping to explain to them where this open source thing was going. And that's something we don't staff doing that, but the commercial affiliates do. I could put up DuraSpace up there. They've already got a storage arrangements with Amazon Storage Service, I think with IBM Storage Service. So this is not anti-commercial of who's laboring in the ecosystem. But there is one point that's important. It fundamentally rebalances the buyer-supplier relationship. We have been in an era where firms that were deeply important to create things that we needed have been monopolized over time with the attendant behavior that would make Milton Friedman proud. Okay? And that's fine. It is their responsibility to do so. Likewise, IBM participating in this, or Huron, or Innovative, they're commercial firms and their desire is to earn a profit, and they're doing what they should be doing. But they're doing it in a way that is open with the community, that does not put my institution or yours in a situation of extracting monopolist prices and rents from us. I think this is an important point, and where a number of firms are already demonstrating that they understand the game is changing for higher ed. The responsibility in the new normal, in the collaborative century of rapid connectivity, has to change. So from the trenches, some people who've been in there, here's one. Overcoming the do-it-yourself culture is a constant struggle. This person writes, this one is unattributed, but he notes that, gosh, I wish we had more people on our project like San Joaquin Delta College. I will tell you, this came from an R1 university with admiration of the talent and the values and the hard work of a community college. These efforts are not just among the big guys or the medium-sized guys. It really can be for all of us. He notes, though, that at my campus, the other penny may not have dropped. We've got some work to do to not try to fling out into local optimization when we really should be taking advantage of the collaboration of our colleagues. Another one from Kevin Maroney, the CIO at Penn State. He says, you know, in the bottom paragraph there, the line's moving and we need to collaborate more often than we compete. And in his words, we compete when we go, oh, gosh, you're doing a wonderful thing, but, you know, it's not just quite good enough. You know, I need a different technical doohickey, and so I have to go make a whole nother one over here just for us. He says we've got to push that line more to the collaboration side. And if there's anyone who has the ability to speak, it would be Jim Thomas. He writes from near the gates of hell as the project manager for Kuali Financial for 4 years. And getting those releases out, managing developers across 6 time zones, a private university, a multi-campus public university, a community college, and all the additional investors who came in, working with the functional council. I mean, Jim's the guy. If there's anyone who can say whether that slope is worth it or not, he says it's worth it. I wish Jim's giving a talk here somewhere, I think. He's the guy who knows as much as anyone the personal labors of making this work. And I'll share a few of my own observations looking across multiple projects around content, around software, around national networking, around our state network called iLight. There's a few meta lessons for collaborating together. So one is you've got to have goal alignment. If you're not trying to achieve the same thing, you really shouldn't even start. And that requires a dating process. Talk a bit. Spend a little time together. Hold hands. See if you like each other or not. Do you have goal alignment in where you're really trying to co-labor together? Do you share the same values that can be surfaced in that early process? It has absolutely nothing to do with institutional size. Nothing. It has to do with management aptitudes, personal aptitudes of being able to bring these things together. When I say values alignment, for example, in the earliest of days of Sakai, and we didn't know how to do any of this stuff when we started, Joseph Hardin had responsibility for teaching and learning systems at the University of Michigan. I had them at Indiana University, and there was no plan B. We shared that value that we would bludgeon this thing into submission, preferably with the help of others or through our own, you know, weight if we had to, but we were not hedging our bets that, well, if this doesn't work out, we'll do something else. That value of Sakai must succeed was essential, and others joined us in that along the journey, and I think sharing that was very different than people looking at Sakai of, oh, well, that would be a clever option. I hope you guys all co-labor and get that all tidy, and then maybe possibly we might pitch in something with it. So shared values are important. Timing's important. Do you agree when certain things have to be done? If you have a platform on fire and you've got to get a solution in 12 months and someone else says, yeah, we need to solve that problem too. You know, if it's done in 36 to 48 months, we're good. We'll put some money in. Be careful. You're starting to set up a concern of, so you've got to be able to work in a common values scheme around similar institutional clocks. Synchronizing institutional clocks, not to the moment, but within a little bit of time, is very, very important. Talent alignment. Our work in collaboration has been the best HR development management training activity we have ever done. I cannot even count the number of promotions in manager, director, and associate vice president across IU from those who have labored and gained experience in working in these projects. The last two points, very important as well, governance, clarity, and problem solving. And I want to be real clear on this point. I have observed in entering a number of co-laboring efforts that people tend to take two approaches. So by metaphor, if we assume that we are standing at the edge of a jungle and there is a mountain over there and it is pouring rain and we are resolved, we should get to higher ground. Okay, we need to get there. That mountain is it. We got to go. One group says, okay, we have a shared goal, a shared objective. We like to stay alive. We're in value alignment, and now is a good time. So let's move. Another group says, whoa, wait a minute. There is a large boulder 100 yards ahead. Are we going left? Or are we going right? Now, you know, we possibly, if we held hands, we could pick it up and we could move the boulder, but I don't know. I mean, what are we going to do about the boulder? And then another person interrupts and says, look, those are all good ideas, but I need you to codify, what if we don't agree? How are we going to make a decision about going left or right around the boulder? I mean, is it a majority vote? Is it, you know, consensus? You see my point. Those who agree on an objective and say, as we encounter obstacles that will definitely emerge in any collaboration, if you are mentally bought in that we will solve those problems together and we will make the next step, I think those collaborations are more powerful than collaborations where people want, you know, multiple pages of codifying everything that might possibly happen, foreseen and unforeseen in the future. An observation from experience. James again notes, and I think rightly, he said, I may promise to cooperate with you and even be nice for a long time, But there may only be a period of time in which I will truly collaborate with you. And I think this is a fair statement. And it is the nature of these communities. And it speaks again to why we need the Kuwali Foundation or HathiTrust as an organization or DuraSpace, a legal enduring entity that in its articles of incorporation says your mission is to do good for higher ed and to have openness and such. So I think the legal entity plus realizing this is normal. This is part of collaborating together. And there are many ways. So you may say, hey, at my school, like I'm tech dude and I got one helper and that's a student. You know, I don't have an army of Java developers to pitch into one of these things. And we weren't in the Google book deal up front. Let me tell you, there are many, many ways to collaborate. Working on QA, quality assurance, making commentary on early designs, socializing things with your faculty. It is abundantly clear across all of these projects I've been involved in that the collaborative labors come from institutions of all sizes, people with strong institutional backing, and people who are just doing it as part of their day job. They can be involved. So if you think about the collaborative capability, if your institution wants to participate in that leverage, in that economy, how do you do it? I mean, you can't go back to your provost and go, gosh, this guy Brad gave a good lecture, and I think we need a collaborative capability. Can we put out an RFP and buy one? No, you can't put out an RFP and buy one. These are experiences. These are built. These are trust factors. You learn how to do this over time. It begins to shape attitudes, assumptions about and behaviors in your staff and going forward. I think Michael Montgomery sums it up well. Life's a dance. You learn as you go. Sometimes you lead and sometimes you follow. Don't worry about what you don't know, because life's a dance. You lead as you go. In Sakai and Kuwali, speaking for IU, we were out front. We invested in those early. We played a leadership role. When HathiTrust came along, and I'm very proud of the IU staff on this matter, got a call from Paul Courant. This was with the CIC. He says, we need to put this big repository together for all the Google content. Would Indiana, he said, what if Indiana and IU become the operators to work together and do that? And we'll be the technology operators on behalf of all the other institutions, and everybody pays in to make it run. Well, I told my staff, and we'd been leading on a lot of these projects, I said, just do whatever Michigan says. Don't debate, well, we wouldn't buy that disk drive vendor, or, oh, no, I don't like that protocol, or, you know. I said, don't debate it. Just get it done. Do what Michigan says. If you've got a question you want to raise, raise it. But they've got decision rights. And, boy, we executed on that, and, boom, it was up in no time. That's what I mean. Sometimes you lead, and sometimes you follow. And your staff have to have that flexibility to participate in many collaborations over time. So what should you do? Let me give you some homework, the collaborative IT agenda moving forward. First of all, there's two things that I think we've got done that serve us very well. First of all, I'm very proud of what EDUCAUSE is doing now. The notion and the new tagline of uncommon thinking for the common good, this will serve us well. Uncommon thinking is what I'm talking about. Ford and GM are not going to collaborate in the way we've talked about. We cannot get all the advice from the corporate sector for what would work well in our industry. And EDUCAUSE is moving there. And I am immensely thankful to those IT leaders who over the last decade and 15 years sewed together. I just have a U.S. map here. We've got Canary in Canada and others. But we've got the network. We are connected. We can do anything we want as far as connectivity, National Lambda Rail, Internet 2, state regional optical networks, state nets. So we're connected. Those are two pieces we've got done. But to do, we have got to get federated identity done. If that is not a hallmark priority at your campus this year, may I implore you to move it to the front burner as close as your time and energy allow. And the way for higher ed here in the Federation within the United States is in common. If you're not a member of In Common, go home and figure out how to join. Get an In Common and then start working on a trust status with authorization and authentication. Because if we're going to collaborate, let's make it easy. We don't need 37 passwords. I don't need to try to manage whether somebody can access a resource or not through, you know, JoeDude21 on AOL. You know, we need to know it's Professor Bob at the University of Pennsylvania. We've got to get this one done. And no EDUCAUSE talk this year would be complete without talking about clouds, except this one. Okay. My staff know I have banned the C word. Do not say the C word because it is unhelpful. This is what we need. We know we've got to connect our campuses, solve this problem to some level of aggregation out there. But we got to sort this miracle out in the middle because we have these peculiar things called policies and rules and things like that. So Shel Wagner, the CIO at Berkeley, he and I, in the current issue of EDUCAUSE Review, we've talked to many of our colleagues over the last 9 months. We've written an article, and we call it Above Campus Services. Have you ever tried to explain ERP to your provost? How's your ERP doing? Provost says, we don't have an ERP. Yeah, you do. No, we have a student information system. What's an ERP? Well, enterprise resource planning came from materials resource planning systems that came from manufacturing. Guys, let's set this one out. We don't have to take this vocabulary. What we can talk about is above campus, that the economics of operating some big machines, cycles factories, and the economics of innovation, the ecology of innovation, is beyond what my campus can do, even the 8 campuses of IU. It's going to rise above campus in many ways. So let's start talking about it as above campus services. 3 possible models there. Commercial sourcing, student email, give it to Google, give it to Microsoft and say, thank you, and just be done with it. There may be some other things. We don't print our W-2s. There's some firm we hire. They print our W-2s. Commercial contracts, we know how to do that. The second one, though, is institutional sourcing. So HATI, again, is an example. Michigan and Indiana are the operators of HATI Trust for a whole bunch of other universities. We can contract among ourselves with pretty lightweight agreements. Maybe we could do more of this. Should CMU, Carnegie Mellon, run an email factory for those who don't want to go to Google because of privacy issues, and they just pay CMU to run it. But the one I think, friends, that will take off is consortium sourcing. That is, collectives of higher ed that already have a trust factor, whether it's Knightley or the CIC or the University of California system or SURA or others, aggregating demand and then placing that demand maybe with Microsoft Azure or IBM or someone else. But by aggregating demand ourselves, we can do that with lightweight agreements. And then if Microsoft's pricing becomes unreasonable or something, we move it to Amazon to host, or we move it somewhere else. So this is all articulated in that article. I think above campus is the way we have to talk about it. Collaboration is strategy, and back to Porter to close this out. So this assertion that choosing to perform some activities, collaboration with other universities, is an activity. Can you do it in similar ways to help drive down cost? So to give it the test, we'll try the 4 check marks. It is a unique activity, and it is interrelated to what we are trying to do to drive down cost ultimately. Herman B. Wells was president of Indiana University for 25 years and changed everything. In his memoir, he writes, and I ask you to read with me, consistent with this statement of policy and throughout my many years of responsibility for administration, I have been motivated by a strong belief that the resources of higher education are so insufficient, doesn't that sound timely, and the opportunities and responsibilities so vast, the only sensible course is to attempt in every way to avoid unnecessary duplication among or within institutions. For me and for a lot of the work we're doing at IU in this era, I am convinced collaboration is strategy And I hope you will join us with the many hundreds of institutions that are already embracing that as well. I know we are out of time, but I will stay down here if anyone has any questions. Thank you very much.
This EDUCAUSE 2009 Annual Conference Podcast is sponsored by Juniper Networks and Quest Communications International. Thanks for listening.